It's time to catch the beat for Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign, and Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Featuring three floors of gently used books, greeting cards, journals, and more. Jane Addams Bookshop is at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign. Online at Jane Addams, that's ADDAMS books.com. As always on WEFT, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Inc., Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I'm pleased to welcome to Catch the Beat an interviewee who I will introduce simply as E, because you are here to talk to us about a new weekly group you've started in town, Marijuana Anonymous, a 12-step program that preserves anonymity for all its participants. Alcoholics Anonymous is well known. There are many AA meetings in this community every week. That was developed in the 1930s by an alcoholic named Bill Wilson, who developed an approach using what he called the 12 steps, that it's necessary first to acknowledge that someone has a problem, accept that there is help, learning to ask for help, making amends for the problems alcohol has caused in their lives, and living a life based in recovery. There are no leaders in Alcoholics Anonymous, just people who've been able to stop drinking and begin a program of recovery that has proven more effective than most medical treatments over the years. AA is based on alcoholics working together, helping each other by telling their stories, and working with a sponsor who will help them go through the 12 steps. Over the years, people have realized that for some, marijuana use is just as addictive and as harmful as alcohol is to an alcoholic. Enough people realized that there was a lot of struggle with it that a group in California started their own program, Marijuana Anonymous, in 1989, based on the same principles as Alcoholics Anonymous. And the program has grown quite a bit since then. There are in-person and online meetings across the country and actually around the world. And you, E, have just begun a new meeting in Champaign-Urbana that promises to bring help to people who know that cannabis is damaging their lives and they're finding it difficult to control their use. What inspired you to start this meeting?
Addiction, plain and simple. This is a program that, based on an AA, as you described it, and it's in our preamble, it's in every wording of our step work. It's really because these 12 principles work. And this, even though Illinois is a legal state, there's really no infrastructure for the MA program here. There's some Chicagoland meetings, and there are some AA meetings that welcome people who have other struggles, but there's a singleness of purpose idea in almost all of these programs that just sometimes makes it a little bit awkward. And it was incredibly important to me to have, first of all, space outside of AA, and also planting the seed of growth of the entire program in the area. I don't think that we have a community that, or a state of country, for all I know. I think that there's so much resistance to the idea that marijuana is even addictive, that any representation is important, is necessary. And I do want to say that you don't have to be an addict. You don't have to identify as an addict to be at the meeting. Anyone who wants to change their relationship with weed and cannabis, THC products of any kind, absolutely welcome. We want them there. I happen to be an addict, I should say.
Tell us a bit about your story, about how you first began using cannabis and how that changed over time, and you recognized it as a problem.
I did, and I my personal story is that I did almost instantly. I started using when I was 15, and I still remember to this day the the physical sense of relief that I had in my body, the way that it released these just quite a lot of anxiety and feeling in general. And I started quickly to break my own rules. I started to say, well, I'm never going to use in my parents' house. I'm never going to use before school. I'm never, whatever. And I broke all of those rules. And I was like, wow, that's concerning. Maybe don't do that. And I was able to stop for about a year and a half before I was like heavily in college and started using again because friends were. And then I got into a relationship that was heavily centered around weed use, and that went on for a very long time. And I was able to quit again for a while. And then the pandemic hit, and I was in a particularly affected industry at the time. It was forced to fundamentally change during the pandemic, and that was very stressful. And I had this moment where I thought to myself, you know, if you go to the dispensary, which is very easy, it's just around the corner. If you go to the dispensary and you get high, you'll feel this relief for 15 seconds, 30 seconds. That's it. It's just not worth it. And my other part of my brain said, yeah, no, it is. I'll take that deal. And I immediately started using again all day, every day, 24/7 for another couple years. And it was in finding MA that I was really able to let a lot of that go and allow myself even to just explore. Because so much about, you know, addiction and everything, because so much of my personal story with weed is to push things away from me, to create a veil around me and between me and the world. So there was always this separation of like brain and body or brain and reality. And there is a document in MA called the 12 Questions, and it just asks you, anyone to read them, to consider just what their relationship looks like. And the first time I read the questions, I was like, oh, A plus, that's a problem. And dove in, and it hasn't been perfect. Relapse is a part of recovery a lot of the times, and I have absolutely done that, and I keep coming back.
Can you describe what the problems are that marijuana was causing in your life?
Apathy, I think, would be the biggest one. Is a very stagnant being. It was very, I guess, unchanging, and that is something that I wanted. I remember when, like, right before I found MA, I had this moment where I was like, oh my God, it's been like 3 years. It blinked and it was 3 years, and it's just gone. The way that it eats time was both part of the draw and a huge way that it was affecting my life negatively. Everything took longer. Everything took longer, but it also was happening. It allowed me to be alive and functional and at least pretend to be like forward moving. But it also kept me from really exploring all of and doing all of the emotional work that I needed to do to want to put the substance down. Financially, it was also a huge problem. Anyone who uses weed in this state knows that it is exorbitantly expensive, much more expensive than in other legal states. And it's so easy to get at the dispensary that it's just sort of like, oh, you know, pass it off. But the fact of the matter is, it's really expensive, and it, you know, ate through my savings very quickly. And I was fortunate enough to have a good job, and I didn't lose during the pandemic. It just changed dramatically. It also really affected my ability to be in relationships, and part of that was pre-existing. It was, you know, the relationship that was centered around weed that was just generally bad for me. Another part of that is that it completely kept me from even being interested in forming real emotional connections with people. I think that I would say that those were the primary problems that we're trying to address.
That the cannabis would remove your sense that there was something you had to deal with so that you would be dulling the feelings that you really did need to deal with in order to move on in life.
100%. What I always say is that what I'm addicted to is escapism. I will do a lot of things to separate myself from the world, and It just this happened to be an extremely effective method and the one that's definitely, on the track to hurt my life the most. But I am an alcoholic. I have used other substances as well, and it's just that nothing is and this is not true. This is a lie that I tell myself as an addict. I tell myself that nothing works better, but trusting myself and being in community does actually work better if you let it, if I let it. I talking to me, I don't know you out in the world. If I say you, I'm sorry, I'm not talking to you.
The 12 questions to help people know if marijuana is a problem for them, I found those quite interesting. Number one, has using marijuana stopped being fun?
Was never fun for me. It was always a tool. And you're right. One way that I've been doing to advertise, I guess, promote, not advertise the meeting and get it out there is with flyers with the 12 questions. I have a flyer for each of them, but I made like four times as many of the has using marijuana stopped being fun, because that's the one that really hits for me. I think it's the first one for a reason. I think like my experience, and there are so many people who repeat this experience in the program, that it just became a way to maintain normality. Like they just didn't feel human without adding this substance to their life and this routine, even because a lot of it is routine and not just, the feeling. Has using marijuana stopped being fun? Hugely important question to ask. Do you ever get high alone? Also a big one. And is it hard for you to imagine your life without using? Is wild, because even in years of sobriety, when I've had these big long expanses, I was sober and I was living a sober life, and I still couldn't imagine it. I still like it's funny because you have to work the steps, you got to work them, and that was part of the reason that it was really important for me to find the other addicts in the area who are participating in the online groups, which are really robust. There is an online meeting or a phone meeting almost at any hour of the day. And in trying to, create community in the online meetings and in finding people in my area to come together and really remind us all of that sense of accountability, I guess I want to say. The only way to, for me personally, to have imagined a life without marijuana is to find other people living it. And that is why I think that was my point there about why it was so important to have a meeting in the area.
Is the general sense that if you do find that you are addicted to marijuana or you have enough of a problem that you need to control your use, that you have to absolutely stop? Does it require complete abstinence, or are some people able to control their use so that it's no longer a problem in their lives?
MA is an abstinence program. We do promote complete stopping of substances, your substance of choice, in this case, marijuana. But there are certainly people I've encountered who ease into it in the ways that they can. And there are people who've left the program because they've decided that a little bit of use is the best environment for them. But our primary purpose is to be here, just be available as a international organization to anyone who does want to explore that question, whether they come in and out of it, they ease into it, they drop. First, they drop the flower, and then they drop the vape, and then they drop the edibles. Like they want to do it in phases as they see how their life is changing. That's all acceptable. Everyone's living their own life, and no one's going to tell you that you're doing it wrong. But we might ask you to not come under the influence. I think that that's fair.
What can you say about the process of going through the 12 steps for Marijuana Anonymous?
It was more freeing than I thought it would be. And a lot of it was more common sense than I really had expected it to be. And really, when it came down to it, my sponsor and I said this, and it's something that I really took to heart, is that you just have to keep trying. One thing that really bothered, like was frayed before I started about the steps and working the steps, was that it would be so final. It would be locking me into a life, and it's this silly fear. I was telling myself anything and everything to stay. under the influence, and I knew that it wasn't the real answer, and I was trying to move through it. But that was a fear that I had going in, and the 12 steps really just ask you to think about yourself. They ask you to try. They ask you to trust. They ask you to try trusting, which is really hard for some people, myself included. And there's a second step, like second part of the steps. I don't know if they have this in AA or not either, but it's like the principles or the concepts, the 12 concepts. And it's like in practicing the first step, you were practicing the concept of honesty. And when it really comes down to it, the steps really just boil down to those concepts, being honest with yourself, deciding to trust, choosing to love. And it's really just a framework to get you there. Personally, it never asked me to do something I wasn't ready to do, and was able to, move at my own pace, found a group that let me do that, which is any good group, in my opinion.
How did you come to find a sponsor?
It was online, and she does live in California, which can make it tricky sometimes, but there really was just no infrastructure here. Everyone that I knew was new to it. They had only just found out that it existed, and they were still actively struggling, and they were all still in these early stages with me, and so there was nobody immediately accessible to do that. So I did start occasionally going to AA and getting a sponsor in AA for a while, but it didn't always work. This person did, as someone who had alcohol as a primary problem, did say, well, maybe you just need to keep using for now. Like, maybe that's just where you need to be. And I was like, I don't think that you're supposed to be my sponsor. I think my sponsor would want me to be sober. So I told that story in an online meeting, and someone that I had spoken to several times reached out and said that I spoke very eloquently and they can't believe that happened to me. And I was just like, do you want to be my sponsor? And we've been together for about 9 months now. And one thing that I think is just generally good advice that I got is that you have to ask to find your sponsor. People might just offer it to you, but the right sponsors, the mystically right sponsor who's gonna get me from point A to point B, maybe point A, point five, like we're really just going one step at a time, is somebody who wants you to ask, wants you to be involved and committed, and wants you to come to them. And I think for me, it worked for me. And I think that this is a large enough program internationally that when you do interface with people in other parts of the country, which is really cool, having friends in Alaska and Texas and Ireland and just all over the world, obviously, introducing yourself to people and listening to their stories and finding somebody who you feel like has gone through what you've gone through and responds to you in a very personal and one-on-one kind of way.
With addiction, the hardest thing is to acknowledge that there is a problem because there's often secrecy around it about how much use there is and how much dependency there is and how much damage there is. And so learning to ask for help is maybe the hardest thing. And so just going to that very first MA meeting, if you're really ashamed of this in your life, is the toughest thing.
To your point about the stigma, there are a lot of people in AA who tell stories of friends who do drink and don't have a problem taking them to meetings because they recognize it in them. I'd like to see some of that happen in MA as well, because I think it would destigmatize this issue if friends who have heard about this meeting are just like, hey, I heard about it. Do you want to try it out with me? Just like every substance, there are people who, a lot of people can drink alcohol responsibly and not have a problem. And there are people who can use weed that way as well. But there are also a lot of people who can't. And if you're one of the people who can and you know someone who can't, please invite them. And if you're one of the people who are not sure whether or not you can, come check it out. Read the 12 questions, talk to us. Maybe you'll decide it's not right for you, and that's cool. That's all we can ask, I guess.
Getting off of marijuana, detoxing is different from detoxing from alcohol because THC is stored in fat cells. And so it can take much longer to get it out of a person's system. What do you have to say to people who might be facing needing to detox from marijuana?
That it's cyclical. The good parts come after the bad parts, and then there are some bad parts that come after the good parts, but then the good parts come back. It's tough sometimes to ride that wave, and that's why relapse is so common, I think, in MA in particular, because post-acute withdrawal symptoms can rear up, and you can feel like you're starting to go through withdrawal anew after months, and that it sucks. It really sucks. And it's so easy to just want to alleviate those physical symptoms again. But the time that it takes to use what we call the toolbox, the everything else that can help you regulate your emotions, it will pass because it is cyclical. As long as I keep in mind that weed is never the solution, and I can't trust that conclusion, and that addictions are cunning, baffling, powerful. They know you inside and out because they're you. They are your brain, and they will use anything that they can to convince you that you need the addiction in like a very real way. For me, it's like a very literal conversation, like cartoon angels and devils, like almost literally. But trusting the process is kind of the only way through detox.
Is there medical assistance? Are there treatment programs for people who simply want to stop using cannabis?
There are addiction treatment centers in the area that accept cannabis use as a primary problem. CARC is one, Carl Addiction Resource Center, but they don't manage like inpatient detox. There's nobody in the area that does inpatient detox for marijuana. And I think part of that again is because of the length of time that it takes, and the fact that the physical effects of weed, like the spaciness and the bodiness of feeling, that subsides so quickly, but you are still under the influence, and it's really hard to just ride it through. And that's really, I think, the only way to trust it will be over.
It's also confusing, I think, because of all the different forms that cannabis is available in now, edibles and all, vaping, everything else. Can you say anything about that that might be helpful for someone looking to control their use?
I will definitely agree that it is, with vapes and edibles in particular, so much easier to use than it used to be. It's so much easier to do it in surrounded by people. You don't have to like go run away and hide. Like it's something that makes it harder than someone, in my opinion, who's just using straight flower. The ease of it is definitely part of the ritual of it now at this point.
MA has a book called Life with Hope.
We do, and it's actually more similar to the AA 12 and 12 than it is the Big Book. It has some stories. It's called Life with Hope. It's available for free in the MA app as well as on MA12.org. And then, of course, in bookstores and on Hazelden's website and all of the physical places. It goes step by step and tradition by tradition. There are a lot of stories that you'll find really ring true with you. And every single step in tradition reiterates that this is a comprehensive program and that it starts affecting your life positively as much as your body might be affected negatively. Your life can be affected positively.
The idea of recovery is really that recovery is from far more than the substance itself. It's from what led you to need the substance in the first place. And so recovery really becomes a lifelong process. And I think many people are committed to their 12-step meetings for the rest of their lives, long after the addiction is a problem.
One thing that I hear a lot in meetings that really rang true for me is that it wasn't a weed problem, it was a me problem. That's a slogan that you'll hear a lot if you come by because it's very, very true. I can't deny that. And I will say that we get a lot of people in MA who come from other programs and they have like a strong foundation in NA or AA, Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous, and they see their addiction patterns in this substance and they are surprised sometimes. They weren't expecting to see it there, but it truly is a pattern that permeates. It can be in food and sex and religion and a lot of different places.
When I looked at the Marijuana Anonymous website, there were a lot of online resources for someone who just wants to get a sense of what it's all about.
You can always check out a meeting. They're open to addicts and non-addicts alike. They're labeled so you can see what kind of meeting it is. There are some that are particularly focused on women or men or people in the LGBTQ community. There are meetings specifically for first responders, meetings specifically for musicians, teachers, people who have a desire to connect in community, not just over their addiction, but over the ways that it affects their life. Finding your people, finding your community has been a part of the success of the program. Meeting these people and allowing them to help me, trusting them to help me, being available to them, knowing that they can trust me and that I can't let them down. You know, listening to them at 2 in the morning when they're really, really close to doing something that they're going to regret. You know, that's what we're here for.
Is there anything you'd like to say before we have to end?
That I'm greedy for more. I really want to be able to reach everyone who needs it, everyone who is on the fence about needing Marijuana Anonymous, and just growing and being able to post different meetings on different days. Right now we're just Wednesday nights and online as much as possible. But I want to grow and I want anyone who needs us to help.
I give a big thank you to Eve for sharing her story about realizing that her marijuana use had become an addiction and she needed help dealing with it. The meeting she's begun in town, Marijuana Anonymous, is on Wednesday nights from 6 to 7 p.m. in room 102 of the Independent Media Center at 202 South Broadway in downtown Urbana. Anyone is welcome at the meeting to learn about marijuana and whether it's harmful in their lives. More information is available at marijuana-anonymous.org or by emailing thcfree-cu@pm.me. That's thcfree-cu@pm.me. This is a valuable resource, and I am grateful to be able to share the story on Catch the Beat. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Jane Addams Bookshop at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign, online at janeaddamsbooks.com. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org. All episodes of Catch the Beat are archived on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs. You can also listen to live stream and archive shows on the WEFT app, available on your favorite app store. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin MacLeod. See you next time.